Welcome to the South Cars Conference number 96140. Connection established.
And now, here with an unlimited supply of misinformation is Mr. Nora.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. News is loose once again in Montreal. This is South Cars TNT, the Thursday night thematic open forum for Thursday, October 29th, 2009. How time flies. South Cars TNT is a directed public service open forum whose aim is to share the collective knowledge with any and all who have an insatiable curiosity for all things. We promise to entertain, to inform, and mostly we promise to have fun. This conference is made available by a good friend at the Western Michigan privately owned Repeater Network. Your net control for this evening is me, Pete Victor Echo 2 X-ray Papa Lima. I'm located in beautiful Montreal, Canada. The temperature tonight is 8 degrees Celsius, 47 degrees Fahrenheit, rather mild for this time of year, under clear skies. Halloween is getting closer. Yes, indeed. Halloween is this Saturday, so hope everyone's going to get out there and encourage the kids, have fun, get dressed up. Yeah, well, obviously the moose should have been tied up. Apologies. Forgot to put myself in the busy state, and apparently somebody just tried to connect to me, and I got kicked off. Well. At this time, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic. I'm sorry, I cracked myself up. At this time, I'd like to ask if there's any emergency traffic or anyone needing to contact the station and move off the server for their QSO. Excellent, excellent. Nothing being heard. Our open forums are being recorded each and every week. Podcasts are now available at www.voip.southcars.com. Look for the South Cars VoIP podcast link at the left of the page. Our disclaimer for the week, of course, the opinions expressed herein are those of the commentator and do not necessarily represent those of South Cars. This is especially true when I'm talking. Tonight we're going to do a mosh posh of a whole bunch of different things. We're going to try something new yet again. We're going to do some reviews of some websites, books, a little bit of news, and general goings-on in the world of amateur radio. I'd like to start by saying that today is a very special birthday. Somebody is turning 50 today. Yes, indeed, it was 50 years ago that Asterix, the cartoon, was born. 50 years ago today, Asterix and Obelix. I'm sure you guys have heard of the comic, something that was very close to my heart growing up. So if you guys wish to check it out, you can certainly Google the information. A lot of good memories growing up with that comic strip. All right, let me start with a little bit of local radio club news. Our local radio club here in Montreal, Victor Echo 2 Charlie Lima Mike, held its Hamfest last Saturday, October 24th. Our club boasts the largest Hamfest in the province of Quebec. It was a huge success with a 741 visitors, 310 vendors manning 117 vendor tables. Booths ranging from Radio World, which is one of the largest ham radio suppliers in Canada. If you guys want to check them out, they're at www.radioworld.ca. Radio World has the biggest booth. They bring lots of toys, antennas, books, power supplies, accessories, many popular radios, including models such as the Yaesu FT-800 series, the 817, 857, 897. I got to play with the ICOM 706 MK2. What a sweet radio that was. The TS-2000 was present, a whole bunch of handhelds, of course. We have booths from AMSAT, Civil Security, which is the Canadian equivalent to ARIS. They were recruiting members. Of course, many, many hams are selling their goods. Lots of bargains to be had, from tubes to antique boat anchors, receivers, transmitters, handhelds, lots of HF, VHF, UHF gear, of course. You know, all the typical stuff you find at your local ham fest, computer gears, cables, connectors. And we can't forget the many, many boxes of goodies that can be found under the vendor tables. So we all know that that's where the really good stuff can be found. Of course, the best part of any ham fest is the eyeball QSOs that you get to have with many old friends and new friends, and putting new faces and call signs, putting names and call signs to faces, sorry. We actually licensed two new hams. There was a certified examiner on the spot in the presence of Claudette, Victor Echo 2, X-Ray, Charlie Papa. I was a volunteer at the event, of course, helping set up tables, helping the vendors with their setups, finding them AC extensions and the like, playing gopher mostly. I helped a little bit with security at the event. It's a huge event in a big hall, and there's a lot of escape routes, so we station ourselves at the many doors so that we can prevent people from thieving stuff, because yes, thieves seem to make their way into our Hamfest too. Actually, we've never had any bad experiences, but that's probably because of the good planning of our club representatives. So our Hamfest have been going on for about 25 years, I understand. Let me just pause for a second before I time out. I was privileged and put together a PowerPoint, including many images outlining the various activities that our club's involved in. Hamfests, of course, public service events, social gatherings, photo contest. Our club has a photo contest every year, which is pretty cool. Our meetings, our field day, et cetera, et cetera. This was in an effort to get new members to join, of course, and we did. We recruited three new members and two returning members who we had lost temporarily. That brings our total membership to 53. You may tell yourself 53 members is not huge in a city of about 3 million people when you count the city and the burbs. But keep in mind that I live in the burbs and not on the island of Montreal. So there's a whole bunch of clubs all over the place in different regions. I personally set a new record for the least amount of money spent at a Hamfest. I only spent $10. I bought myself 12 insulators, the plastic insulators, the kind that you homebrew antennas with. And I usually spend a couple more bucks than this. But like I said, the day was a huge success. Everyone involved was having lots of fun. And I'm telling you all this just to ask you all to support your local clubs and your local Hamfest, because that's what it's all about. You can volunteer at the events. You can just go hang out and meet interesting and like-minded people. At our next local club meeting is going to be our AGA and elections. I plan on running. There's three positions up for grabs, three people who are stepping down. So, again, I invite you all to get involved. It's a good thing, and it's good to give back to a hobby that gives us so much. I will pause. All right, let's start with today's program, if you can call it that. I'd like to start by telling you a little bit about Jamboree on the Air. This year, this past October 17th, was the 52nd Jamboree on the Air. Here's a story that I found surfing the net out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and I thought that it very well represented the spirit of the event. Speaking of Cheyenne, Wyoming, actually, I heard on the radio this morning that they were forecasting 12 inches of snow in that city over the next few days. A little early, you might say. Well, I think so. In Denver, they're forecasting about 16 inches. So Merry Christmas to all y'all in Cheyenne and Denver. I'm actually a little bit jealous because I really, really like snow. And perhaps it comes from living in Canada all these years. Anywho, this story on the Jamboree on the Air comes from the Wyoming Tribune Eagle and was written by Michelle Dines. And it's titled Scouts Make Global Connection by Learning Ham Radio and Flag Signals. And I won't read the whole thing, but just the highlights. I will pause. So it goes something like this. A trio of radio listeners huddled around the transceiver as they scanned the dial for fellow enthusiasts. The ham radio crackled with the sound of static as operators attempted to connect with listeners across the globe. The hands-on demonstration allowed Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, and guides to talk about the weather, scouting, and what activities they like best in scouts in Iowa, California, Germany, and all parts of the world. It's part of the 52nd annual Jamboree on the Air on Saturday, Scouts also move through a series of activity tables as they learned about other forms of communication. They deciphered Morse code messages, something we all know about, of course, created construction paper flag signals, and formed scout trail signs that warned other hikers about dangers ahead. Texting and cell phones may have replaced Morse code and ham radio. Amateur radio operators connected with first responders when Hurricane Katrina knocked out the power, said Shonda Rice, a local assistant scoutmaster and crew advisor. People get so tied into their cell phones, she added, they don't understand how telecommunications evolved. Sometimes the latest and greatest technology isn't the most reliable. Isn't that the truth? And even the old-fashioned tin-canned phone uses the same principle as its modern-day cousin. Phones, as you all know, use vibrations to send messages that are translated to the other end by a receiver. It's a way to transmit information, whether it's in a tin-canned phone, ham radio, or a cell phone, she added. 10-year-old Jesse Edwards said he enjoyed learning how to signal a letter, the letters of the alphabet with a wave of a colored flag. I remember when I was a kid, we used to do that too, called semaphore, and kind of an early precursor to communications, and I thought that was good fun too. Claire Lake, 10 years old, said she liked the beeps of Morse code key and learned how hearing aids work from the vibrations of the Sing Fork demonstration. I pause. A young scout said it was just fun to talk to people from other countries. Radio skills are most useful during emergencies, and Saturday's demonstration made them want to learn more. So that's a little bit of that. I won't read you the whole article, of course, because it was a lot longer, but I thought it was very good. I was involved in scouting when I was younger. I was involved in scouting as a leader, and it's a great movement, and I think it's great that they're introducing. Jamboree on the Air is a great, great event to introduce our youth to the joys of ham radio, because with cell phones and text and social networks, Facebook and the like, it's kind of hard to get them involved in radio, but when you get them to play with the buttons and you get them to talk to someone around the world, that sure is magic for a lot of them. Once again, I will pause. I just saw the note in the text box. Jack, I love my MK2. That's cool. That's a good recommendation. I kind of liked it too, and I almost dished out the almost $700 Canadian it was for that radio. My wife certainly would have killed me. But I digress, as I usually do. All right, for the next portion of the show, I'm going to do a little bit of a web review of various websites that I've come across over the years that I think are kind of interesting. The first one is called Solder Smoke. I've mentioned Solder Smoke before. You guys may know the podcast and the Solder Smoke Daily News. The website is www.soldersmoke.com. That's all in one word. And it's the website that keeps on giving. Started in the spring of 2006 as a technical talk between two hams, Bill, M0HBR in London at the time, and Mike, KL7R in Juneau, Alaska, would meet on Echolink and discuss their homebrew radio projects. These QSOs were recorded and turned into podcasts. That sounds kind of familiar, doesn't it? Sadly, in January 2007, Mike, KL7R, became a silent key after an automobile accident while vacationing in Hawaii with his family. His website's still in operation. I invite you guys to check it out. There's lots of useful techie links. He was certainly a very, very technically inclined person from having listened to his podcasts. His website is http://kl7r.ham-radio.ch. And you can certainly go to the soldersmoke.com website, and there's a link right there to KL7R's useful website. I will pause. After that, Bill, M0HBR, kept the podcast going, and he continues to do so, and he brings us more and more interesting content every 2 weeks. A new podcast every 2 weeks. He's up to 117 podcasts so far. They're approximately 60 minutes each. I usually like to listen to them on my commute to and from work, on the bus and the metro. The topics that he covers is a general travel log. He's traveled quite extensively. He talks a lot about QRSS and MEPT. He's very much into QRP, which I think QRP is very good. He reports, he has reports on by various correspondents who go to various ham radio conventions, ham fest events for live coverage, interviews, and all with a big, big emphasis on homebrew projects. And you would think this guy's an engineer, but he's not. He's a diplomat who's just kind of self-taught like many of us are, which is the appeal. Bill Mira is his name, M0HBR, now M0HBR/I0, lives in Rome. He describes himself like this. My own gadgeteering is focused mainly on ham radio electronic projects and other admittedly geeky technical pursuits. I was introduced to ham radio by the great author and storyteller Gene Shepard, K2ORS. Shep, as he was known by his fans, had an AM radio program in New York during the 70s on, I think it was on WRO, if I'm not mistaken, but I'd have to look that up. Like I said, Bill's lived in many parts of the world, and because of that, he brings a very interesting and unique perspective to the podcast. Which brings me to the next website, which is attached to soldersmoke.com. This is the Solder Smoke Daily News and Blog. You can find that at http://soldersmoke, all in one word, soldersmoke.blogspot.com. You guys are probably familiar with Blogspot. soldersmoke.blogspot.com for the Solder Smoke Daily News. This is where Bill keeps us updated between podcasts and where we can contribute with ideas, feedback, interesting articles and happenings, and other interesting tidbits. He posts articles and stories of interest to all those who, as Bill puts it, suffer from the knack. What is the knack? Has anybody ever heard of this affliction that we all suffer from? Well, it appears that Dilbert, you guys all know Dilbert from the comic strip, was also diagnosed with the knack at a very early age. I will pause. And there's an interesting little cartoon on the web where Dilbert's mom takes him to the doctor and where he's diagnosed with the knack, and it's quite humorous. And I'm actually just looking for the page right now so I can read you a little bit of that. But of course, I'm disorganized and I can't find it, and here it is. So Dilbert's mother says, I'm worried about little Dilbert. He's not like other kids. Yesterday I left him alone for a minute and he disassembled the TV, our clock, and the stereo. The doctor, in a deadpan voice, says, it's perfectly normal for kids to take things apart. Mother, the part that worries me is that he used the components to build a ham radio set. Doctor, suddenly alarmed, oh dear, I'm afraid your son has the knack. The knack, the mother says. Doctor, yes, the knack. It's a rare condition characterized by an extreme intuition about all things mechanical and electrical, and utter social ineptitude. The mother, can he lead a normal life? Doctor, no, I'm afraid not. He'll be an engineer. And then you can see the mother sobbing. It's a really cute cartoon. You guys can Google that. I thought it was kind of very representative of many of us. I will pause once again. So these are the kinds of stories that you'll find on one of the types of stories that you'll find in the Solder Smoke Daily News. A little bit of humor there, but there's also very interesting and technical things as well. Another example of Solder Smoke Daily News stories is which one? I have two or three here, but let me pick one that's really cool. The Wizard of the Vermont Hobbit Hole has really outdone himself this time. I've lost my place. Michael Rainey, AA1TJ, has posted a very interesting report on his experiments with voice-powered radio. Yes, you heard me. Voice-powered radio. No batteries, no 12-volt power source, just voice. He calls it El Silbo. as Silbo takes its name from Silbo, a whistled language of sorts that's used on the isle of La Gomera in the Canary Islands to communicate across wide mountain valleys. The best DX of this language is apparently 2 miles, or just over 3 kilometers. That's actually not too bad for just using your voice. Let's see, this double sideband DSB radio telephone transmitter is powered entirely by the instantaneous, not stored, energy produced in the operator's voice. The RF output power in this prototype falls within the range of 5 to 15 milliwatts. The circuit is essentially a high-level DSB modulator crystal-controlled RF oscillator. To date, Michael's best DX QSO with this radio stands at 160 kilometers, or 100 miles. 100 miles on 15 milliwatts DSB with voice powered. Wow, that's just a little bit longer range than the whistle language of the Isle of La Gomera, isn't it? This concept is not new. The idea for a voice powered transmitter dates back to about the 1950s. Now here's an excerpt from Time magazine dated October 17, 1955. And I quote, "The U.S. Army Signal Corps has developed a radio transmitter that needs no energy except electricity generated by the speaker's voice. This trick would be impossible if the set used vacuum tubes, but all it has is a single transistor, which needs only a faint current. When the speaker's voice makes the microphone vibrate, it generates enough current to operate the transistor and put the voice on the air. The present model, small enough to fit in a telephone mouthpiece, can transmit 600 feet. Well, that was in 1955, so we've gone from 600 feet to about 100 miles, so that's not too bad over 50 years. Actually, another thing that's happened over 50 years is from flight to a space travel, from the Wright brothers to space. That all happened within about 50 years, too, give or take. Anyhow, later models, says that George Bryan, the developer of the set, should be good for a full mile. The next step would be to build a voice-powered receiver. It will store up voice electricity while the speaker is talking, then use it to pick up the answer while he's listening. Bryan believes that the entire outfit can be tucked into a plastic container no bigger than a matchbox. Kind of like some of the QRP boxes that we have today in Altoids tins. At the time, Bryan, who was the developer, figured he could mass-produce this thing at a cost of $20. George Bryan and his voice-powered transmitter, which appeared in the December 1955 issue of Popular Science magazine, complete with photos if you guys can dig one up. And with this website that keeps on giving comes the literature that goes with it. Bill Mira wrote us a book just for us ham radio lovers. The book is called Solder Smoke, A Global Adventure in Radio Electronics. It was published in 2009 by Lulu Press, www.lulu.com. It's 205 pages long, and is you can buy it for $19.99. The book chronicles Bill's adventures in ham radio since pretty much since childhood. Well, let me read you the back cover here. Solder Smoke is the story of the secret after-hours life in electronics. Bill Mira started out as a normal kid from a normal American town. But around the age of 12, he got interested in electronics, and he's never been the same. Neither of any of us, I don't think. To make matters worse, When he got older, he became a diplomat. His work has taken him to Panama, Honduras, El Salvador, the Spanish Basque Country, the Dominican Republic, the Azores Islands of Portugal, London, and most recently in Rome, which is where he is now and where he produces his podcast from. In almost all these places, his addiction to electronics caused him to seek out like-minded radio fiends, to stay up late into the night working on strange projects, and to build embarrassingly large antennas above innocent foreign neighborhoods. That probably sounds familiar to a lot of you guys, too. Solder Smoke takes you into the basement workshop and electronics parts stores of these exotic foreign places and lets you experience the life of an expatriate geek. If you are looking for restaurant and hotel recommendations, look elsewhere. But if you need to know where to get an RF choke rewound in Santo Domingo, Solder Smoke is the book for you. Solder Smoke is no ordinary memoir. It's a technical memoir. Each chapter contains descriptions of Bill's struggles to understand, to really understand, radio electronic theory. Why does P equal E times I? Do holes really flow through transistors? What is a radio wave? How does a frequency mixer produce some and different frequencies? I've often wondered that myself. It's a mixer. How does it produce some and different? These are all the kinds of questions that keep you up at night. This book is for you. Finally, Solder Smoke is about brotherhood, international cross-border brotherhood. And I'll stop there because it goes on for a little bit longer. But I was planning on giving you guys a more detailed review of the book. I've been hearing about this book for quite some time, and I finally got around to ordering it in September. But due to the efficiency of our Canadian customs, I only got it 2 days ago, so I haven't had a chance to leaf through it yet. I've gotten through about the first 10 pages, and I already can't put it down. A lot of it rings really, really close to home, so I already recommend it, but I'll try to bring you a more thorough review in a later episode. And finally, Bill also has a YouTube page, so you can YouTube M0HBR, and you'll find some interesting videos that he's made, and you can just see what he looks like if you want. Bill's homepage is www.gadgeteer.us, gadgeteer.us. So if you guys want hours of endless surfing, I highly recommend Solder Smoke. You guys can just Google Solder Smoke. It'll be one of the first hits that comes up. So something that I've been listening to for about a year, and I think it's really, really interesting. I will pause. Pause for a quick sip of cool, refreshing water. At this time, I guess I'll open her up and see if anybody has any questions, comments, or concerns so far. Over to you guys. All right, no comments, no concerns. Well, I haven't lost any of you. I still see about 20 of you guys connected, so hopefully I'm not boring you guys. I think this stuff is all really interesting, but maybe some of you guys do, and maybe some of you guys don't. If you don't, you can let me know. All ideas are welcome. A little inspirational, a little bit of an inspirational website that I found in my travels quite by accident. This is www.ted.com, ted.com, ideas worth spreading. TED is T-E-D, T-E-D.com. TED is a small nonprofit organization devoted to ideas worth spreading. It started out in 1984 as a conference bringing together people from three worlds: technology, entertainment, and design. This is something, I worked in an art school for years and years and years. I'd come from the corporate world and kind of fluked into this art school. Kind of always considered myself a very, very nerdy techie, of course. Don't know how I ended up in an art school, but I'd never realized that everything is interrelated. And there's a lot of art and technology, and there's a lot of technology and art. And I ended up working on a lot of art projects that incorporate a lot of technology, so it's certainly not a new concept. But anyways, TED, bringing together three worlds: technology, entertainment, design. Since then, its scope has become even broader, of course. Along with the annual TED Conference in Long Beach, California, and the TED Global Conference in Oxford, UK, TED includes the award-winning TED Talk video site. This is what I'm getting to here on TED.com. The annual conference in Long Beach brings together the world's most fascinating thinkers, doers, and speakers, and they're challenged to give a talk, the talk of their lives, in 18 minutes. TED.com makes the best talks and performances from TED and partners available to the world for free, and it's open source. A pause? All of the talks featured? Well, 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 I will pause here, not from this break, but take a break from TED.com to say hello to the lovely and talented Isabel. Hello, Isabel. Isabel just came back from her Halloween party at the Brownies. We were speaking of Jota before, and she's dressed up as a... what are you dressed up as, Isabel?
Half-witch, half-zombie.
Half-witch, half-zombie, and she's chewing the biggest wad of gum that I've ever seen in my life. I didn't know how she fit that in her mouth. How did you get that in your mouth, Isabel? See, she's got so much gum in her mouth, she can't even talk anymore. Welcome home, Isabel.
Hi.
Did you have fun at your party?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she said she had fun at her Halloween party. I encourage all you guys to encourage the kids because it's great, great fun. And now it's past your bedtime, isn't it? And she's nodding. Isabel is my oldest. She's 8 years old, and she's a little bit mic shy. Not like Megan, my 4-year-old, who will grab every single opportunity she can to get on there. But do you have any final thoughts for us, Isabel?
Hi.
Well, she says hi, so we got something out of her. That's good. And she looks really, really cool. See if I can get a picture of her and post it somewhere. I will pause if I haven't already get timed out. And she's just asking me how I could be talking so much, but you guys know I love to talk. KJ4PUJ says, Pete, are you getting this? Is this addressed to me, Pete, or another Pete? Over. All right. Well, if something comes up, stick it in the text box, and I'll try to read it while I'm not reading or talking. Anyhow, Ted.com. I'll get back to Ted.com. You have a good night, Isabel.
Good night.
Have fun. And she says bye, and she's off. Ted.com believes...
Bye!
Thank you, Isabel. Ted.com believes passionately in the power of ideas to change attitudes, lives, and ultimately, the world. So they're building a clearinghouse that offers free knowledge and inspiration. I mean, where can you get anything that's free these days? Well, except for South Car's memberships, of course. Free knowledge, inspiration, and the world's most inspiring thinkers, and also a community of curious souls to engage with ideas and each other. Ooh, and Isabel's come back and showed me all the good candy she got. She got a good score. And,
three bags full.
Three bags full, just kind of like the woolly sheep. What's that? Yes, sir, three bags full. The Baba Black Sheep song, yes, three bags full of candies. See you later, Isabel. Anyhow, getting back, clearinghouse that offers free knowledge and information from the world's most inspiring thinkers, and also a community of curious souls to engage with ideas and each other. The site was launched in April 2007 and is ever evoking work in progress and gets thousands of hits daily. It's an important and you're an important part of it. If you have an idea, they want to hear from you. Today, TED is therefore best thought of as a global community. Global communities, that sounds familiar too, eh? The global community of South Scars. Well, this is the global community of TED. And once again, I've lost my place. It's a community welcoming people from every discipline, cultures, who have just two things in common. They seek a deeper understanding of the world, and they hope to turn that understanding into a better future for us all. TED.com. Check it out. Another short pause for a refreshing sip of water. I want to share another truly, truly inspirational talk that I found on this website. Many of you guys probably consider yourselves true home brewers. Well, here's a story that I think will challenge that homebrew claim. They say that necessity is the mother of invention. You guys have all heard that. Listen to this story. At age 14, At age 14, in poverty, drought, and famine, a Malawian boy, Malawi, Africa, built a windmill to power his family's home. 14 years old. This young man's family couldn't afford the $30 a year to send him to school, so he had to drop out of school to help support his family working the land. Limited amount of land that they must have had in poverty, drought, and famine, of course. So with limited reading skills and very little knowledge of the English language, he taught himself about basic electricity and power generation from books he borrowed at a local library. He then scavenged all his materials he needed and built the machine that would change the lives of his family and his community forever. He's now 22 years old. His name is William Kamkwamba, and he shares in his own words the moving tale of his invention that changed his life. Kamkwamba, Kamkwamba's story. Now, that's a mouthful. Kamkwamba's story is documented in his autobiography. It's another book that I haven't read, but I want to pick up because this story I found truly inspirational, called The Boy Who Harnessed the Wind, Creating Currents of Electricity and Hope, copyright 2009 by HarperCollins Publishers. After seeing this talk on TED.com, I really, really want to order this book. Anyways, I've got a little clip here, a short little clip that's about 2 minutes long. And this is a little clip from TED.com. It's open source, so it is not stolen, and I can rebroadcast this very legally. And I just wanted you to hear about 2 minutes of this young man's speech in his own words. So here we go. I'm going to pause, and then I'll come back with the clip. Here we go.
Another book put that knowledge in my hands. It said, windmill could pump water and generate electricity. Pump water meant irrigation, a defense against hunger, which we were experiencing by that time. So I decided I'll build one windmill for myself. But I didn't have materials to use. So I went to a scrapyard where I found my materials. Many people, including my mother, said I was crazy. I found a tractor fan, shock absorber, PVC pipes, using a bicycle frame and the old bicycle dynamo, I built my machine. It was one light at first, and then four lights with switches, and even a circuit breaker modeled after an electric bell. Another machine pumps water for irrigation. Queues of people start lining up at my house to charge their mobile phone. I could not get rid of them. And the reporters came too, which led to bloggers, and which led to a call from something called TED. I had never seen an aeroplane before. I had never slept in a hotel. So, on stage that day in Arusha, my English lost. I said something like, I tried, and I made it. So I'd like to say something to all the people out there, like me, to the Africans and the poor who are struggling with your dreams. God bless. Maybe one day you watch this on the internet. I say to you, trust yourself and believe. Whatever happens, don't give up. Thank you.
TED.com, guys, TED.com. Check it out. A truly, truly inspirational video from William Kamkwamba. I came across this by accident. I think I saw it on another website, I believe. And I couldn't believe the story. I thought, man, this kid, 14 years old, an inspiration for us all. The video of this talk is available at www.ted.com, and I highly, highly recommend you guys check it out. A short documentary about Kamkwamba's work called Moving Windmills won several awards last year. Several awards. Kamkwamba and his friends are now working on a full-length film, which I certainly plan on seeing when the time comes. You can read the ongoing details on his blog, which he keeps with help from his mentor, a gentleman from TED.com. And you can support his work and other young inventors' work at movingwindmills.org. www.TED.com, people. Check it out. Don't know what that was, but I think I was doubling with someone. Anyhow, moving right along, this falls into the realm of the, this has nothing to do with websites or anything really, the Russian woodpecker. Has anybody ever heard, I'm going to open it up right now, I was supposed to wait till the end, but I just can't wait. Has anybody ever heard of the Russian woodpecker? Over to you guys. No, no takers. No takers. Nobody wants to try to guess what the Russian woodpecker is. Well, it's not a feathered animal. Certainly not. I found this was quite interesting too, as a ham radio enthusiast. The Russian woodpecker was a notorious Soviet signal that could be heard on shortwave radio bands worldwide between July 76 and about December 1989. Sounded like a sharp, repetitive tapping noise at 10 hertz, giving rise to the woodpecker name. The random frequency hops disrupted legitimate broadcast, amateur radio broadcasts, and utility transmission, and resulted in thousands and thousands of complaints from many countries worldwide. The signal was long believed to be that of an over-the-horizon or OTH system, over-the-horizon radar. This theory was publicly confirmed only after the fall of the Soviet Union and is now known to be the Duga 3 system, part of the Soviet ABM, Anti-Ballistic Missile Early Warning Network. This was something that NATO military intelligence was well aware of all along, of course, having photographed it and giving it the NATO reporting name Steel Yard. If you guys Google it, you'll understand why they call it the Steel Yard. This thing was huge. It was just huge. I can't even describe it. It looked like the fence of a giant. Anyhow, the signal was long believed to be that of I've already read that paragraph. The Soviets had been working on early warning radars for their anti-ballistic missile system through the 1960s. But most of these had been line-of-sight systems and were useful for raid analysis and interception only. And none of these systems had the capability to provide early warning of a launch, which would give the defenses time to study the attack and plan a response. Don't we all love the Cold War years? At the time, the Soviet early warning satellites network was not well developed, so work started on over-the-horizon radar systems. That's kind of fascinating. Over-the-horizon radar. I thought that was really cool. That's what kind of drew me to this. The first experimental system, Duga 1, was built outside of a small town I can't pronounce in the Ukraine, and successfully detecting rocket launches from as far as 2,500 kilometers away. This was followed by the prototype Duga 2. Wow, who would have guessed that one, eh? Who saw that coming? Duga 1, Duga 2, built on the same site, which is able to track launchers from as far east and from the Far East, and submarines in the Pacific Ocean. As the missiles flew over another town that I can't pronounce. So I'm just not even going to try. I apologize. My eyes are starting to get all blurry-eyed here. I've been suffering from a little bit of a cold all week, and I've been getting tired very easy. And when I get tired, my eyes seem to be the first thing to go. Don't you love getting old, eh? Both the radars were aimed east and were fairly low power. But with the concept proven, work began on the operational system, the new, what do you think it's going to be called? Duga 3, that's right. System used a transmitter and receiver separated by about 60 kilometers. I will pause. And we're back. Triangulation quickly revealed that the signals came from the Ukraine. I skipped a paragraph. Apologies. I actually skipped a whole page. My goodness. So, the Russian woodpecker disappeared in the late 1980s. Even as the FCC was publishing studies of the signal became less frequent, and in 1989 disappeared altogether. Although the reasons for the eventual shutdown of the Duga 3 system have not been made public, the changing strategic balance with the fall of the Cold War in the late 80s likely had a major part to play. Another factor was the success of the USKS early warning satellites, which entered preliminary service in the early 1980s. By this time, they had a complete network working, so I guess that made the Duga 3 or the beloved woodpecker obsolete. The satellite system provides immediate, direct, and highly secure warnings. whereas any radar-based system is subject to jamming, and the effectiveness of over-the-horizon system is also subject to atmospheric conditions. Wow, atmospheric conditions, just like in ham radio, isn't it? Probably why they were so disruptive. According to some reports, installation in Siberia was taken off combat alert duty in November 89, and some of its equipment was subsequently scrapped. The Duga 3 site lies within a 30-kilometer zone of alienation around the Chernobyl power plant. The definition of zone of alienation, here's another good one that made me laugh. The zone was established, the zone of alienation, also known as the zone, was established soon after the Chernobyl disaster of 1986 in order to evacuate the local population to prevent people from entering the heavily contaminated territory. The area adjoining the site of the disaster was originally divided into four concentric zones. The fourth most contaminated zone had a radius of 30 kilometers, or about 19 miles, from the nuclear power plant. The border of the zone was later adjusted to better parallel the location of highest contamination. Man, 30 kilometers. Would you want to live 30 kilometers from the site of a nuclear explosion? I don't think I would either, but we all remember Chernobyl, and the effects of that lasted for years and years and years and years, so hopefully we've learned our lesson there. It appears to have been permanently deactivated since their continued maintenance did not figure in the negotiations between Russia and Ukraine over the active early warning radars. Let's see, the antenna still stands, however. Like I said, you guys can Google it. Check it out. Go Google the Russian woodpecker. It's worth it. The antenna still stands, however, and has been used by amateurs as a transmission tower using their own antennas and has been extensively photographed, which is why you can Google it now. So like I said, go check this thing out. It was huge. I'm going to open it up for comments here. I know there's a lot of guys who have been around amateur radio at least since the 70s and 80s. I want to know if, now that I've described this thing, maybe it rang some bells. Has any of it, oops, I'm going to time out in 17 seconds, so I will pause. But before I time out, let me open it up. Has anybody out there ever heard the Russian woodpecker and maybe didn't know what it was or maybe was? Over you guys. Come on. There you go. Sorry about that. Somebody out there has got to have heard the Russian woodpecker. Let's try it again. Anybody out there ever heard of or heard the Russian woodpecker during your ham radio careers? Passing it over to you guys. After all, this is an open forum. KJ4PUJ, come on aboard. I apologize, I was doubling with you. Come on aboard. Perhaps we're just getting interference from KJ4PUJ. Tony, come on aboard if you got anything to say. Well, if you're trying to transmit KJ4PUJ, you're not making it. So perhaps you want to just throw your comments in the text box. Try again. I can hear not transmitting. Okay. Not transmitting by choice, or perhaps you're having a problem. Want to try it again? Over. All right. Technical problems. Don't we all know those? That's cool. We'll come back a little later on there. No pressure. No pressure. Maybe you've heard of the woodpecker. Anyhow, I thought this story was pretty cool, and I wanted to share that with you guys. Let me see. Where am I in my... slew of papers here. We're drawing to near, 52 minutes. Doing pretty good. This week in amateur radio, you guys have probably heard of this one, TWIAR, TWIAR.org, TWIAR, of course, let's start over, TWIAR.org, This Week in Amateur Radio. Here's another great, great website where you can get all the happenings and breaking news in the world of ham radio. These programs are heard on WBCQ shortwave at 7.415 megahertz via satellite, amateur radio repeaters, and is also available via podcasts. So another website slash podcast that you guys can listen to. I really like this one, Ham Radio News, news that's just specifically for us. Here's a few examples of some interesting tidbits you can pick up from this site. This is from This Week in Amateur Radio this week, of course. This Week in Amateur Radio. I wouldn't want to give you last week's news. Posted a couple of days ago, October 25th. This one is a pretty cool one. Sambandila Sat, now Oscar 67. The South African amateur radio satellite, Sambandila Sat, has been officially designated Oscar 67. Last weekend, the satellite was successfully activated and tested. We've got a new satellite up there, guys. I wonder if Clint is listening. If not, I'm going to have to send him this tidbit, although I'm pretty sure he already knows this. Where was I? Last weekend, the satellite was successfully activated and tested with a number of contacts made through its transponder, but it's not yet open for routine use. Satellite was launched from Kazakhstan on September 17th. The main payload is a multi-spectral imager. I'm not sure what a multi-spectral imager is, but it sounds pretty cool. But the satellite also carries an amateur radio component consisting of a 2-meter, 70-centimeter FM repeater. After after Oscar 67 is fully commissioned, the repeater will be activated with an uplink at 145.880 megs and a downlink at 435.350 megahertz. There will also be a voice beacon at 435.300 megs. The transponder mode will be controlled by a CTCSS tone on the uplink frequency. Oscar 67 was sponsored by the Department of Science and Technology and was built at SunSpace in cooperation with the Stellenbosch University. I have no idea where that is. I should have looked that up. I apologize. In addition to the SA AMSAT amateur module, the satellite carries Stellenbosch University's Radiation Experiment and Software Design Radio Project, SDR Project. Yeah, satellite pretty much just for us again. Ooh, I'm going to time out. Let me pause. Like I said, SDR Project and an experiment from Nelson Mandela Metropolitan University and a VLF radio module for the University of KwaZulu-Natal. VLF, of course, being very low frequency. But you guys know this. Here's another short one posted October 21st. Researchers at the University of Wisconsin, this one I found was kind of interesting too, falls into the social realm of ham radio, kind of. Researchers at the University of Wisconsin and Miami University of Ohio, that's interesting, are seeking copies of amateur station logs from 1913 to 1927. So if there's any of you old-timers out there, if you got any logbooks or have come across any logbooks from 1913 to 1927, you can submit them to this research project. They hope that they may offer insight into the relationship between individuals' work and leisure activities, technology, and their social networks. I quote from the Director of Engineering and Operations for Wisconsin Public Radio, Steve Johnston, WD8DAS. Early hams laid the foundation for the now ubiquitous use of technology for communications and entertainment. Many operators did not work in the technical field, but pursued amateur radio as a hobby for its own sake. Isn't that true? We all do the same thing, or many of us do. Some of us are fortunate enough to have really cool ham radio jobs. Let's see. Keep losing my place. I apologize. This is a true success story about how a pastime can develop into an entirely new commercial and social phenomenon. I continue. Phil Kim, an assistant professor at the Wisconsin School of Business, has noted that diaries, letters, QSL cards and station logs can contain valuable insight into the link between an individual's occupations, hobbies, and friends. Early in amateur radio history, thousands of ham radio enthusiasts were licensed by the government to comply with the Radio Act of 1912 and began to more carefully document the new communications era. Amateur radio operators during this time period were on the forefront of a new method of communications and social interaction, similar to how social media is evolving today. We notice a lot of similarities between these two groups, even across time. Steve Lippman, an assistant professor at Miami University of Ohio, concurred, "Why would you want to go to Miami University in Ohio? I think I'd rather be in Miami where it's nice and warm, but that's just me. I guess it's the impending winter in Montreal speaking here. Sorry, I digress." Steve Lippman continues, "We can learn a lot about ourselves and our own interaction from how these pioneers pursued their hobby and expanded their social networks." Oh, by the way, that wasn't a knock on Ohio. I'm sure Ohio is a very nice place. I'm just saying I'd rather be in Miami. In an effort to uncover new information about approaches to work and leisure time and the development of social networks, Kim Lippman and Johnson are comparing early ham licensing records from the Department of Commerce with detailed information in amateur operator station logs. So, like I said, if you happen to have an old ham station log from the period 1913 to 1927 that you would like to include in this study, please contact Steve Johnson, WD8DAS, via his email or by telephone. And they give a number here. I guess it's his office number, 608-262-5584. You guys could be part of history. I will pause. And that was my 60-minute timer. I've been blabbing for a whole hour. Let's see, have I lost any of you guys, or have I gained people? No, exactly 20, just like we were before. So I guess what I'm talking about is somewhat interesting. Like I said, if you guys want to be a part of history, part of this study, I think this is a really good one. I certainly don't have any access to any of these things, but if you guys do, I encourage you guys to send a copy. You can get all these gentlemen's information via This Week in Amateur Radio's website, twiar.org, www.twiar.org. Oh, and thank you to K4VKS, who puts in an FYI, and you learn something every day, and that's certainly true in my case. Miami University in Ohio was named for the Miami Indian tribe that inhabited that area. Thank you for that information. I appreciate that. I did not know that. I just kind of assumed. See, we have a University of Montreal in Quebec City, and we have a University of Quebec City in Montreal, so I kind of assumed it was the same thing, but I never realized it had a Native American history. So thanks for that information. I will pause and have a sip of water. You can probably hear it in my voice. It's the cold coming out. I'm starting to get a little bit hoarse here. All right, well, let's open it up for questions or comments at this time. I've been blabbing a lot. Let's see if anybody has anything to say. Does anybody have any comments, questions, or concerns about what we've discussed so far? Back to you guys.
This is KD8HQU.
KD8HQU, welcome aboard, David. Tell us what you have to say.
Well, first, I'd like to say congratulations on a very fine presentation this evening. It's extremely interesting and learned a lot here. I was out of the room for part of the time to answer a phone call while you were talking about the Russian woodpecker. So you may have mentioned what I'm going to say, and if so, I apologize. But on Wikipedia, if you were to look up Russian woodpecker, there's actually a soundtrack there of that sound that you're referring to. And it's kind of interesting to listen to it. It's a mundane sound. It sounds like Morse code, kind of. But it is there, and I assume it's just as it would have sounded when it was in operation. The other thing maybe is just an FYI regarding a multispectral imager, which is a device that can take pictures of the various colors of light given off from a source. Now, when a human eye looks at light, it looks at all the colors mixed, but the multispectral imager can actually separate those colors, kind of like a prism. The practical application for that would be for the colors of light that are not visible to the human eye. Extensive applications for it in nuclear physics. Again, just an FYI, great presentation tonight, and I'm glad I was able to be here. And thank you, Pete. This is KD8HQU.
Oh, excellent, David. Thanks for coming aboard, and thanks for the specifications on that. I now know what that is, and I didn't realize what it did. So I had no idea that Wikipedia also had a soundtrack from the woodpecker, because if I would have known that, I actually would have brought a clip along for you guys to listen for, well, not for like 5 minutes or anything, I guess, if it's that mundane. But no, that's cool. Concerning the device that we're discussing, I found a quote here in a book that I thought was kind of interesting. I just have, well, this is the book that I was telling you guys about before, The Solder Smoke, A Global Adventure in Radio Electronics. On page 16, Bill Mara says, light is an electromagnetic wave at a frequency for which our eyes have evolved sensitivity. So that ties into what you just said, David. Our eyes are natural, biological, electromagnetic wave receivers created over millions of years by evolution. So I guess it should come as no surprise that we are interested in building radio receivers, because in a certain sense, we are radio receivers. And I thought that was kind of a neat quote. I actually highlighted this quote in the book. That's pretty much as far as I've gotten. So thanks, David. Do you have any other comments while we have you over?
This is KDH2U. No other comments. Just wanted to bring those two pieces of information out and make it available. And speaking of evolving, I'm still in that process. Thanks a lot, Pete. This is KDH2U.
Yeah, roger that. Well, aren't we all evolving? If we weren't evolving, I think that we would be regressing, certainly, but if we wouldn't be involved in amateur radio, I think we're all involved in this great, great hobby, because we like to evolve, we like to learn, and it's certainly been my case for many, many years, ever since I've been involved in ham radio. I learn something new every day, and I had a lot of fun preparing this presentation, because I learned a whole bunch of things that I just didn't know. So let's. Does anybody else have any comments or concerns at this time? Back to you guys.
N2MH.
N2MH. Whoops. Sorry. N2MH coming via IRLP 4740. Welcome aboard, sir.
Yeah. Good evening, Pete. Good evening to the net. This is N2MH. Correction to your comment about Gene Shepard. He did his show on WOR 710 in New York, and I used to listen to that show when I was growing up and first got my ticket back in the mid-60s. As an interesting side note, he had WOR produce a QSL card for the station that was a picture of the station's transmitter, and on the transmitter you could see the glass window into the final amplifier stages, and you could see the tubes in there cooking away. Very impressive QSL. You know, any ham of the era, or even today, loves to see a power amplifier cooking away, and that's what it was. Back to you, Pete. N2MH.
Ah, excellent. Well, thanks for the clarification. Indeed, WOR. And I don't know. I don't know what I said, but I knew there was a W and an O in there, but I guess I just got it backwards. But thanks for that. I'd like to see that QSL card. I've been told that there's some Gene Shepard shows available on the Internet, available as podcasts or MP3s of some sort. I'm not sure, but I'd be interested in I've been hearing a lot about this gentleman, and I guess he was quite popular in New York City in the 70s, I believe, so I would certainly like to hear some of his shows. And apparently he talked, and maybe you can clarify this for us. I guess he used to talk on the radio quite a bit about his ham radio experiences. Is that correct? Over.
Yes. His some of his shows are available on the net. I believe WBAI, an FM station here in the New York area, runs his shows every once in a while. They lasted for 45 minutes. At the time, there was his show ran from 10:15 to 11 p.m. 10 to 10:15 was a news show. They did 15 minutes of news every hour on that station. Station is still around today. It's still a talk station for the most part. Let's see. What was his question?
Did he do ham radio?
He did a ham radio show every once in a while. If it was once a month, it was a lot, but it wasn't frequent by any stretch of the imagination. He'd probably lose audience if he did that. But he did have one every so often, Pete. Go ahead.
Ah, very good. Well, Roger that. Thanks to Mark and to MH for that. I guess if you're on AM and all you do is talk about ham radio, you probably lose a lot of people. Not everybody's a shortwave listener. AM is pretty cool. I've actually, as I've gotten more mature, I won't say I'm getting older, even though I am, as I've gotten more mature, I've kind of find myself listening to more talk radio. I mean, I still listen to some old-fashioned rock and roll once in a while, but I listen to a lot more talk radio than I used to. Maybe that's why I like to talk. Who knows? Anyhow, I'll break with Mark, and does anybody else have any comments or questions? Over. All right. Well, we'll carry on. I have a few more tidbits. We're looking at, my God, we're looking at 9:41 already. How time flies when you blab. Well, when I blab, anyways. All right, I have a few last. I have one last website that I'd like to share with you guys, and this one I really came across last minute and quite by accident. It's called Podcast Directory. For those of you guys who like podcasts, www.podcastdirectory.com. Podcast Directory is all in one word. You could Google it, of course. Podcast Directory. Google that; it'll bring you right to the site. I was researching topics for the show, and I came across this thing. This is a real gold mine of audio information. You'll find podcasts on here from literally every subject under the sun. There's podcasts that I don't even want to listen to on there, but there's podcasts about everything, including and not limited to art, science, technology. There's kids podcasts, family podcasts, news, politics, food, games, culture, government, sports, music, TV, film, man, the list just goes on and on and on. I don't know how they store all this stuff. They must have like huge amounts of servers. You can search for your favorite topics or podcasts by country, by language, by buzz, by popularity, by category, by tags, by region, by city, even by Google Map, which I thought was pretty cool. Google Map. Have you guys played with Google Map lately? Google Map, another sidebar here, but Google Map has been sending trucks all over the place. And I think Paul N4FTD might be listening, but my wife and youngest daughter were running around the town here where I live, and the Google Maps truck just happened to be driving by. So if you look up my address on QRZ.com, you can actually see my wife and young daughter. Well, they're actually down the street. They're 10 houses down the street from where I live. But they're for posterity. They're on the Google Map. I thought that was pretty cool. Anyhow, getting back to podcastdirectory.com, this site can also help you get set up with your own podcast if you want. We're already doing that with the help of Paul, of course, N4FTD. But if you guys want to get into the exciting world of podcasting, they'll help you out. They'll explain what is podcasting, creating an XML, podcast hosting software, plugins, hardware, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And a special of special interest to us, There's a whole radio section if you want. I haven't come across any specific ham radio podcasts. I didn't look into it that deeply, but I'm sure they're there. And there's certainly a lot of, if you look up amateur radio, what you'll find is actually amateur broadcast radio stations. You know, a guy like myself who would just, you know, want to have a Led Zeppelin radio station where all I did was play and talk about Led Zeppelin. And hey, who knows? Maybe we'll do a TNT on Led Zeppelin one day. But anyhow, check it out, www.podcastdirectory.com, and I will pause. All right, sorry, I just wanted to have a little bite of the coffee crisp that I stole from my daughter Isabel's three bags full of goodies from the Woolly Sheep song there. Anyhow, we're getting closer to the end, so I'm going to open her up for questions and comments again. We're looking at 9:45. We're 15 minutes before the end, so anybody has any questions or comments, come on aboard now. Sorry, I left a longer pause because I was chewing said chocolate bar. Anyhow, carrying right along, it's time for... the TNT mailbag. Well, we have no mail. We haven't received any mail. But we want mail. Please send us your feedback. I'd love to get some mail from you guys to read in this section. I want to have a TNT mailbag section. But without mailbags, without mail, sorry, I can't read any mail in the mailbag section. I encourage all y'all to submit your ideas and topics for shows, feedback. Just write us and say hi if you want. We'll read your letter on the air. If you want to become famous, if you want to hear your name on the air, send me an email. You can send me what you like, what you don't like, and like I said, any and all topics will certainly be considered. You can send your mail to voip@southcars.com. Please send me some mail so that I can have some mail for the mailbag section. I will pause. KJ4PUJ puts in the text box, update for Facebook fans, new privacy policy goes into effect soon. Comment period open now. I don't know if you can transmit now. Tony, if you're capable, would you like to come aboard and give us a little bit more details? Over.
First, Pete, can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, we can hear you. Your audio is a little bit hot, but you're coming through now. You're coming through. Go ahead. KJ4PUJ, go ahead. Oh, we got an inactivity timeout. That mean he can't transmit? Let's give him a shot. All right, well, we'll have to get Gordon to come back one day with Echolink 301. And maybe he can explain what inactivity timeout means. Not sure, but I'm guessing Tony. Tony, can you transmit? Come on aboard.
Yeah, we'll try this one more time. I actually got this from a niece of mine. Facebook is updating their privacy policy where they're going to open up to outside sources your personal information. So for those of you on the Facebook page, you might want to go in there and consider what you have posted in terms of personal information and what you wish to have shared. KJ4PUJ from the Florida Keys.
Wow, that's huge. KJ4PUJ, Tony, thanks for that. That's not a tidbit. That's huge. That's very, very important information. I mean, we all know how big Facebook is. It actually took me a long time to get on board Facebook, and I finally did, and it was cool because I found a lot of my friends that I hadn't I'd lost touch with, people from high school, college, university, old jobs, etc. So, yeah, sharing information, isn't that a huge problem? And we all love technology, but we're also at the mercy and victims of technology at the same time. So indeed, thanks for that, Tony. I encourage everybody. I'm certainly going to do that, and especially for your children, for your kids. I mean, I'm not too worried about what's on mine. It's not anything secret. Anybody can check out my Facebook page if you want. It's my email address, so you can find me very easily. But a lot of teenagers and kids is the social networking. So, indeed, I encourage all of you guys to check that out. Thanks for that, Tony. I will pause once again.
N2MH again, Pete.
Yeah, come on aboard, Mark. N2MH from VE2XPL and the TNT Open Forum.
Yeah, VE2XPL and 2MH. It looks like you can get some MP3s of Gene Shepard's shows on a website called www.flicklives. That's FLICKLIVES. Flick Lives. Flick was one of his characters in his stories, one of the kids he grew up with. And that's where the origin of the term Flick comes from, in Flick Lives. Foxtrot Lima, India Charlie Kilo. Flick Lives. VE2XPL and 2MH.
Ah, excellent. Well, thanks a lot, Mark. I'm going to check that out because, like I said, I've been curious about it for a while. I'm going to chat with our friend and VOIP manager, Mr. Gordon, KY6V, and see if I'm going to get some of these websites that I've been talking about posted on the breaking news page, perhaps, or on another part, because I know that some of you guys might not have a pencil or pen handy, and been throwing a lot of these websites out. So, if we can do that in some way, or perhaps on the podcast page, I'm not sure how we'll do it, but we'll let you guys know. And I'll include this Gene Shepard link on there as well, because I'm kind of realizing right now I'm even having trouble remembering a lot of these websites. But anyhow, all right, do we have any? I just got my 10-minute warning here, so do we have any other comments for the evening? This is the TNT Open Forum. All right, we'll carry on with looks like final announcements. Once again, we're recording this. It's going to be available for a podcast on www.voip.southcars.com. You guys know that one pretty well, I'm pretty sure. Look for the South Cars VoIP podcast link on the left of the page. Quick announcements. We're looking for a few good men, or women, of course, to take the role of co-producers for this show. I'm looking for help. We'll be responsible for every aspect of your very own show if you want. You can do this on a one-time basis or on a regular basis if you choose. I encourage you guys to come aboard on a regular basis. It's kind of like being an NCS. You get to talk more if you want. Or if not, you find the guest and you get him to talk. And that's good, too. It's a great opportunity to get involved in a one-of-a-kind net, the Open Forum. So please contact us at voip@southcars.com. Send us an email, and we'll have something for the mailbag portion of the show. Also, send us your input, suggestions for topics of discussion in this open forum. Any and all topics of conversation will be considered. You guys can probably hear my last piece of paper floating around here. Also, if you have a skill or topic of interest you want to share with us, we invite you to be the host of one of our South Cars TNT Open Forum. You guys, if you have something you want to share, we invite you to be a guest. I will make a final pause. I'm glad that my voice has held out this long. So we're looking at, 2154 or 154. Actually, yeah, 154 UTC time. How time flies. All right, with that, I'm going to open it up one last time for questions or comments, and if not, I'm going to shut her down. So anybody have anything they'd like to add to any of the topics discussed tonight, or any topic that you may wish to discuss? The floor is open. Come on aboard to the TNT Open Forum. All right, well, I guess that means cows have come home. So I'd like to thank everyone for listening to me blab for an hour and a half. It's a lot of fun doing the research on this project. I certainly learned a lot, and I want to thank you guys for being there with me. Next week on the TNT Open Forum, we will have another edition of our Open Forum, which we did 3 weeks ago. So we'll have a panel discussion, of course, and we'll be discussing, have a roundtable discussion on various topics that I'm just going to throw out. We did that 3 weeks ago. We discussed many things from how did you become a ham to are you prepared for an emergency? And so we're going to do another roundtable discussion like that, and I look forward to that as well. We'll have Gordon, KY6V, John, W8RAT, and we will also have K4JAK. Jack will be joining us, and I'm waiting to hear from a mystery guest, so we might have a mystery guest joining the roundtable as well. So with that, I'm going to leave you with a final thought for the evening. The final thought I'd like to leave you with tonight is something that you guys have heard, but with a twist. To the pessimist, the glass is half empty. To the optimist, you know, of course, the glass is half full. But to the engineer, the glass is twice as big as it has to be. Good night, everyone. Thanks, and 73s.